objectives which empower and ennoble, leading to an attachment to the true self and the attainment of a greater capacity of combat against the enemy. Drugs arises in the context of tradition. When were they used? What types were used and to what effect and purpose? Clearly drugs have been employed in traditional Sistist purpose of transforming the consciousness of those who have taken them, and that they were employed typically for the betterment of the nation as a collective and for the enhancement of the consciousness of the spiritual qualities of the group and especially of its priest caste. Those drugs were employed with approval of the nation's ruling elite, the priest caste and warrior aristocracy, and for certain castes on certain occasions to evoke or commune with certain entities, to transform their consciousness and put them into certain states of mind, body and soul that enable them to communicate with the spirit world. Drugs that were approved for any purpose other than their spiritual transformative effect were relegated to a more mundane purpose, such as in the realm of herbalism, from which most were dried and for usage in war and as aphrodisiacs and having healing properties, all which served as mundane as well as spiritual purpose, that of securing the nation and its deities, its survival, expansion and advancement. Thus drugs have always had their place in tradition and have been looked favorably upon by the nation's ruling elite as well as the collective as a whole. This is the realm of tradition. Within the context of the modern world, those drugs which are used are typically those which harm and create vast numbers of societal problems. Those which are approved are those which harm, and those which are disapproved of and or considered illegal are those which help, such as anabolic androgenic steroids and epidra, human growth hormone, etc. The obvious dysgenic and morgenic intent of the system can be seen in the list of approved substances, indeed substances that are not only approved but which are established as socially acceptable and indeed as signifiers of social desirability: alcohol, marijuana, recreational drugs, for example, LSD, ecstasy, cocaine, opiates, etc. The more desirable as the Jews continue their erosion of white culture and supplant it with their own culture of chaos as means of carrying out their genocidal agenda. Such drugs are designed to disintegrate the consciousness of the Goyim, to tear down and destroy the integrity of their soul via creating disturbances in homeostasis and poisoning the person, leaving them a contaminated and dysfunctional wreck spiraling down into the grave. Such is the intention of Dre and the establishment in their controlled media and drug culture as a socially desirable and even mandatory pursuit, is the means of establishing this as a societal norm and normalizing destruction. Such an anti-traditional act is the black magic of Dre, which strikes at the root of non-Jewish societies as means of destroying them and attempting to usurp total power for themselves, and this in the most profitable way possible for the Jew. Hence the Jew controls the entire trade of drugs, from the agricultural base or laboratory from which they are developed into a finished product, to the retail stores that sell these vile substances for the destruction of the souls of the Goyim, and this for maximal profit. Thus we can see the contrast between yesterday, a world of harmony within the context of a traditional society which serves its own ethnic population and has an organic culture that has developed through itself, and the drugs that were used by that group in a largely harmonious manner, and the world of the Jewish world order of Zion, wherein drugs are trafficked for usurious profit, drugs which are not only harmful to the individual but to society as a whole. The drug culture of today is yet another onslaught on the part of Dre to destroy the population and to masquerade as if it were those other than themselves that were orchestrating those influences, using proxies to traffic in their nostrums. In order to revolt against the modern world where drugs are concerned, one must oppose all of that which is being brought into the nations of the white race, and to oppose the ultimate cause of those drugs, the Jews and their shabbos goyim. The Jews historically have utilized the drug trade as one of their main mechanisms of disintegration of non-Jewish societies. They are expert poisoners and have made this their mainstay in addition to the mental influence of the black magic mind control cults which have been used to anesthetize the minds of the Goyim and soften up their rival for the slaughter. Drugs are the third most lethal mechanism of Dree's onslaught against their white race next to this black magic and their usury system of exploitation backed up by hired goons. The subtle erosion of society is their means through which they effect their chaos, which is as leavening, causing the harm to society to a greater and greater extent in a logarithmic fashion. The leaven of the Pharisees is their hypocrisy, and also it is their cunning guile and modus operandi, which manifests itself in the form of drugs, yet another of their pharisaical leavens. The society's Jews have infested, have degraded to such an extent that they are now in a death spiral and, under the influence of Dree, the desperate population is encouraged to retreating from the problems Dree has created to a world of pleasant illusion, the key to which is the recreational drugs, giving people the false options of a fantasy land to escape from the hell world that Dree perpetually orchestrates and ensures perpetuates itself, both in its intensity of influence and scope, expanding for the seedy underbelly of modernity to the mainstream, wherein all are drug-addled. Inebriates such that those who are not hooked into the drug culture are looked upon as prudish antisocial types who have branded upon them the mark of Cain. These are the true rebels, rebels against the chaos of the modern world and heroic man of race who seek to eliminate the modern infection and work back to the world of tradition, the redeemable elements of their population. Not all souls will be saved, as the many too many have already cast themselves into the lake of fire. Ethics, the ethics of spiritual viridity, of a life lived under the auspices of the divine will, in a more active masculine relationship therewith, given the acts and omission of the Varia, the Aryan hero in his pursueth of godhood and immortality on the mundane plane, within the matrix of Zion of the Jewish distortions and perverters of truth. Comporting oneself towards others and to oneself entails existing according to the divine will as an active virile being and not, as in the pseudo-spirituality of the lunar Semitic Weltanschauung, and behavior in a passive pathos and emotionalism loosely held together by an hyper-rational unbalanced consciousness. Rather, the mind of the Varia is beyond the rational and emotional, and thus can be spoken of as a transcending of the lower states of consciousness and the lower drives which abound as so many leaden chains of materiality to the non-white hordes which fetter them to the earth as earth-born souls incapable of any transcendent consciousness. One's relationship to oneself as potential godman should be one's goal, and to be a goal possible of attainment must be undergone with adamantine will and a laser-like concentration of focus. A detachment from the chaotic welter of the world and its transient kaleidoscope of illusory appearances. An unaffectedness and an upward gaze towards the divine, seeking with discernment and penetrating insight to perceive the great in the small and the essential forms and ultimate causes beyond the Mayavic veils of the rainbow reality of the matrix. Far from being a mere contemplative life, it is a life both active and contemplative, in neither the brutish stupidity of the labor nor the effete escapism of the lunar Semitic priest caste who live in a world of pathos and mewling prostration before the divine. A self-transcendence, a self-observation as vehicle of soul in its self-development and quest for the primitian fire for both himself and for his own kind, a true light bearer in the darkness of the false light of worldliness. Towards others his actions must be guided, both as enemies and as friends in the appropriate way, targeting enemies for subjugation either in the form of rectification or annihilation, and supporting friends on their own quest for godhood under the aegis of prudent and wise counsel and voiceless and selfless acts. Mutually must be the principle, and this in relation to the common objective of the securing of unknown people's survival, expansion and advancement to a godlike state of being. The ethics of the Aryan Varia are diametrically opposed to those of the lunar Near East, and that of self-mortification, annihilation and false humility and hypocritical altruism towards others, towards the weak and useless at the expense of the strong and healthy. The ethics of the Varia create a spiritual world of heaven upon earth, Those of the Lunasimitic priest type create a world of sickness, decay and degeneration, with the laurel wreath going to the loser who wins by losing in an impossible leaping out of the causal chain of being. Such is not path of immanent transcendence, but rather a sickness unto death that leads towards the grave. Such a path the true Aryan shuns and condemns, and shifts his gaze from the sewers of the Near East towards the heights of Elysium, and begins his ascent along the mountain top towards the Olympian heights, combating the hordes of Untermenschen, which attempt to bar the way in craven cowardice, obstructing his path with their crippled forms. The heights beckon, there is no time for such. The ethics of the Aryan Varya are those of the Olympian hero, not the dwellers of the abyss, the Typhonian race of Dri and their brute slaves. Ethics, enemies, internal and external ethics towards one's enemies are those of a different variety from those towards one's friends. What is considered ethical or good conduct or attitudes to have is radically different between friends and enemies. This standard, which, in relation to Christian standards, would qualify as a double standard, is antithetical to the Christian creed of loving thine enemies. Indeed, those whose ethics are consistent with the orientation of spiritual viridity, with the positive progress of spiritual development, are the antithesis of the mainstream understanding of ethics, which are rooted in Christian universalism, all men are brothers. Turn the other cheek. Judge thee not. Render unto Caesar the things that are Caesar's. Sell all thou hast and give it to the poor. Blessed are the poor in spirit, etc. The ethics of the man of tradition, of the Aryan Varya, are those of an active and transcend nature. They transcend the emotional pathos of the Christian and neo-Christian New Age, neoliberal pacifist. They are bellicist in the sense of warlike dash, a war against the lower states of consciousness and a war against those forces of disintegration which threaten to submerge the higher true self into the bubbling cauldron of samsara and the inevitable extinction of the soul through weakness. The ethics of the Aryan are true to type, to the Aryan archetype, and can be contrasted as below and amplified upon by way of contrast with the still prevailing orthodoxy of the Christian morality. The morality of the chandal, of the slave. Judge thee not. No, the Aryan employs discernment. He judges, and he does so reasonable and in wise man, discriminating between distinct phenomena and evaluating them in relation to sound and healthy means and ends. Those which are conducive to his betterment, and most importantly, and giving priority to the betterment of his race. Thus he judges, and like the blade of his knife, hones his judgment over time to keep it razor sharp, that he may employ it in the war everlasting that is life, in his combat with the enemy. All men are brothers. This creed he rejects and qualifies, critically questioning its fundamental tenets. He defines man as manas, the Sanskrit word connoting mind or consciousness, and predicates this term of that category of organisms he calls white or Aryan, and to many lesser and varying degrees to those conventionally called his brothers, his equals. He decries the claim that he could ever be an equal or brother to those who are vastly inferior in terms of the human virtues to himself. He denies this claim of the egalitarians and substitutes in its place another law table made of adamant: all Aryans are men. Only Aryans are men. Such is the principle which serves as the iron threshing floor upon which he threshes his enemies, they who are not men, save only to varying degrees participating in this category. Render unto Caesar the things that are Caesar's. This he also rejects, as he acknowledges only himself as Caesar, Caesar Augustus, and Optimus Maximus. He renders unto his higher self his lower self as a sacrifice, such as in the case of Odin sacrificing himself to himself, not to some abstract concept or nebulous deity called the Honora. Rather he sacrifices himself to his higher principle, and thereby achieves a unio mystica with the divine mind. At a mundane level he renders unto his own race the spoils of war, his labor and his effort and energy, knowing as he does that the race from which he springs is the source of all his being, and thus without it he will cease to exist and have no possibility of returning to this plane of existence. Thus he sacrifices his physical self so as to live again through the continuance of his future possibilities, which are merely fractals of the racial soul manifesting itself at different dimensions. Thus, contrary to the Christian, he does not forsake the mundane world and simply dispense with all of his resources out of such as in the case of the liberal guilt complex for alleged past sins, but rather sacrifices himself for the continuance of the racial soul. He rather gives of himself to his collective and has no thoughts of any guilt or sin. He looks upon only that which takes away from his collective and tear betterment as sin, and all of that which contributes to the betterment of his collective as virtue. There is no need of sin expiation save in his committing treason against his race. Then he must, should his treason be sufficient, serve himself up as a sacrifice, paying the ultimate penalty that all traitors must pay should their treason be sufficiently grievous, that being death. Sell all thou hast and give it to the poor. This also he will not do save insofar as he contributes to the poor of his race, so that overall the race as a collective benefits. His understanding of poverty consists not of a deprivation of material decadence, but the conditions and means for the realization of the destiny of his race both individually and as a whole, with the destiny of the individual being sacrificed for the sake of the collective should it be overall beneficial. Poverty thus is either the individual obstructing the destiny of the racial soul, or being obstructed themselves by an external source. In the former case the individual is deemed criminal and sacrificed; in the latter, if deemed necessary by the wise archons or rulers of the race nation as made known through transmission from the divine, from the gods of his race, and ultimately of God, the divine mind, whether the sacrifice be deemed a necessary cost. Blessed are the poor in spirit. Thus poverty is a lack of spiritual life and vitality and a submersion in material decadence, an avoidance of the challenges which precipitate the cultivation of the true self. In the Christian understanding, always schizophrenic, blessing comes in the form of a state of spiritual ignorance and a false connection with an invented deity concocted by Jews as a simulated egregor that is used to siphon off the thought energy of its devotees. To be blessed in the understanding of the Aryan is to have developed the necessary conditions of attaining the higher states of being only he is able to attain. Such is the spiritual riches or philosophical gold, and the non-white savages are indeed poor in spirit, being mere brutes who are reduced to the lowest level of savagery and can at most attain a demonic state of witchcraft aptitude in other realms, for they who have come under the thumb of Christianity, the religion which is poor on spirit, they languish in spiritual poverty and forsake their high state even if they were Aryan, at least in potential, being actual wiggerized white savages whose mind is captured by the poison of Jewish Christianity. All of those who have come under the spell of Abrahamic religion have become spell caught by the Jewish black magicians and put under their God spell gospel, become servants of the enemy, the Jew, against their race, and have destroyed their capacity to harmonize with the racial soul. Those who have reached the stage of incorrigibility of Abrahamic spiritual syphilis, the late stage of the cranial wasting disease, become eventually like Gotham in The Lord of the Rings, servants of the Dark Lord Jehovah and his minions the Jews, and thus must be counted in the enemy camp. With such creatures of the Dark Lord they must be dealt with via deception, via the creation of false appearances to deceive them into thinking one is not a direct threat, for, should they ever come to understand that one is a Jew hater or opponent, he will be destroyed by them should they be able to attain the means towards this end. Christians are especially dangerous, as in their defective and insane minds they are permitted to do anything serviceable for the Jew, including torture, murder and other forms of sadistic and spiteful assault against their own kith and kin, as witnessed the history of Christianity as outlined in the multi-volume work The Criminal History of Christianity by Karl-Heinz Chner. The irrational Beethoven emotionalism is in stark contrast to the mentality and behavior of the Aryan. The liberal or leftist, by contrast, is also the antithesis of the Aryan and his ethics. He is a pacifist and defends his pacifism just as the Christian with ruthless savagery of blind irrationalism should one deviate from his egalitarian pacifist creed. The History of Communism as Related in the Black Book of Communism, amongst many other works, illustrates in bloody choreographic script the atrocities that were perpetrated by the Jewish-led humanitarians who rivaled their Christian forebears in savagery, Bolshevism from Moses to Lenin, Dietrich Eckart. Thus the bellicosity of the Luno-Semitic creeds incites to violence even the most lofty races, as the Germanic Teutonic and others bears witness to. Once the mind virus is instilled, it is only with great difficulty excised, and thus Christians and liberals, like all rabid dogs, must be observed with a watchful eye, as they are an unpredictable and deviant group, their minds being contaminated with the rabies of the Middle East, pestilential miasma of the demon seed Jew. The ethics of the Aryan towards their own kind are self-sacrifice, taking away from their own self in terms of energy, time and resources, and contributing to their collective group, and the ethic they have it towards enemies is that of antipathy, of circumspection, and of active opposition, if need be, in a way leading to their own extermination from the earth, going down fighting in a blaze of glory. Should the white race fall under the missiles of the enemy, it will necessitate the final act of God, of their white gods, against the enemy in a Gotterdammy run that will carry out maximal harm to the enemy. For should there be no white gods as stewards on the earth, there is no point to the earth at all for its chance for salvation from the demiurge, and the gradual materialization concomitant thereof will have passed with the passing of the great race. Thus either the white race will live or all must perish, and will be better off perishing as they would otherwise die in a slow death of their own making, a necessary result of their chaotic minds enslaved as they are by the Jews in their matrix of illusion. The realm of eternity, of heaven, is available only to the Aryan, not they who have lost their first estate through Uyghurization. Sin versus virtue: the contrast between the Aryan morality or code of ethics and that of the Semitic can be observed in law tables that have existed at different times throughout history, of which two stand out as representative samples of the contrastive worldviews of Aryans and Jews: that of the morality of negative restriction embodied in the works of the Old Testament and Talmud of the Jews, and that of positive life-affirming creed of the nine noble virtues of the Aryan. The latter may be a modernist construct, but nonetheless parallels the code of ethics that have circumscribed Aryan behavior throughout history, and thus may be called authentically Aryan, true to type. The positive life-affirming creed of the Aryan is based upon the mutual regard between equals, between and amongst fellow Aryans, and can be expressed in the phrase live and let live, whereas the Jews' ethics are more partisan and adhere to the notion of live and let die, are a supremacistic, expansionistic creed which permits nothing outside of itself and thus exists vampirically, seeking to absorb into itself, integrally, the sum total of all life. The former resonates with God, with the sum total. The latter is completely contrary to God, is, when considered from a non-partisan, non-philo-Judaic standpoint, completely satanic in the sense of adversarial to God, and it wishes to exalt itself as God, an absurdity, as the particular can never exceed the universal from which it derives its being. Though Judaism and all philo-Semitic supremacist creeds may represent themselves as having a monopoly on spirituality, being the spirituality or relationship between man and God embodied in a creed that they exalt, the Jews, whose entire behavior runs counter to universal harmony, can thus hardly predicate of themselves a special relationship to the absolute, as they are special only in the sense of satanic, not glorified or exalted as they wish to represent themselves as. The morality of Semitism has, like a poison, filtered into the consciousness of the white race and has contaminated it with a morality of restriction based upon weakness and a pacifistic subordination of oneself before the absolute. This has crystallized in the form of Christianity, which in its origins was of Jewish invention and which later only became slightly Aryanized under the healthier consciousness of whites and their attempted opposition to the creed. The creed, whether originally entirely Jewish or somewhat syncretized with Aryan spiritually, has become what it is and contains the following prohibitions called the seven deadly sins that underscore the restrictive nature of Semitism and Semitic ideology, and how it leads to a restrictive and neurotic mind can easily be inferred by contrast with the nine noble virtues as outlined below. Lust. This sin makes desire for sexual activity sinful or prohibited, which strikes at the root of the life force. If understood in characteristically Abrahamic fashion according to the original understanding thereof, to lust after means to have a desire for sexual activity, flesh pleasure which must be denied. This runs counter to the traditional Aryan morality of the transmutation, not the denial of sexual congress. In the Christian understanding, any sexual activity is sinful, save as an instrumental mechanism of the conception of children. Such an understanding of sex is a misunderstanding from a spiritual point of view, as to fail to utilize sexual activity as a tool of transmutation of the lower into the higher self is to create chakral blockages and to live a life, like all Christians, of inhibited neuroses, as the energy flow within the soul, the bodies of men is obstructed and creates an unhealthy organism that atrophies and gradually wears away amidst the chaotic flow of energy in the unbalanced consciousness. Sex should be used as a tool of transmutation via left-hand path Varma Marg alchemy, not snuffed out and suppressed. Insofar as it advocated the suppression of the flow of energies, Christianity is a recipe for destruction, and presumably is why it was developed as a soapstone from the beginning. The second deadly sin, gluttony, is something common with the Aryan tradition, which was always parsimonious, yet at the same time oriented towards empowerment in terms of nutrition, and thus did not go into the direction of ascetic self-abasement as in the case of the desert religions, which may have been motivated by a desire to cool the body and or food scarcity just as much as the dyspepsia of the body ideology that follows from the sickly beings who were its inventors. The consumption of food by the healthy and strong necessitated the most nutrient-dense foods, namely those derived from an animal, and the consumption of them in sufficient quantities to maintain a powerful output of energy and force to accomplish their tasks. Hence the comparative overabundance of food consumed by the more active whites was not gluttony, save as viewed from the perspective of the Middle Eastern Abrahamist, who himself didn't practice what he preached and was the most hypocritical of individuals, as is the usual case. Thus the Aryan has never contravened the sin of gluttony, but is not, save under the deleterious influence of Christianity, followed a path of self-deprivation of nutrient-rich foods, and wound up living against life according to the creed of Jesus, "My kingdom is not of this world." Those who adhere sincerely to the creed of the Semitic ideologies wind up being a neurotic starveling, unable to do anything requiring great effort. Hence they have recourse to what they deem spirituality, which is simply a pacifistic contemplation, in reality a state of relaxation, as lacking any adequate nutrient-dense food and sufficient quantities thereof to do anything requiring greater efforts. Contemplation has its place both in Aryan spirituality and Semitic, but can only be authentic when adequate food is consumed to enable the proper performance of the contemplative life. Greed. This sin is and has always been a sin frowned upon in the Aryan tradition in whatever particular form or instance historically. The greed of the Jew is notorious and reflects itself in the very term Jew, which has become synonymous with greed in today's world. The consciousness of the Jew is greedy consciousness, rapacious, desiring and governed by the lower drives. The figure of the Svartal of Sindhiada, who conceal themselves in the earth and mine gold, represents the Jew quite nicely, as do any of the Bankster gangsters who control the Jew world order. The prohibition on greed, making it a sin for which one must beg forgiveness from a Jewish father figure deity, is absurd and laughable as a prescription for whites, as all whites, all Aryans, instinctively by virtue of their higher consciousness, adhere to the antithetical behavior, that which is against the obsession with mammon worship. All Aryans condemn greed and have never supported it. In today's modern world, under the ideology of possessive individualism, of Judaism, Most whites have become spiritual Jews and have gone the way of all flesh and have become obsessed by the gleam of gold and have acquired a greedy consciousness. Sloth. The lazy Jew of proverb illustrates by contrast with the Aryan warrior or hero figure the distinction between those who require prohibitions against sloth and those who do not. The Aryan has always been an active figure and opposed to all forms of laziness. The Jew sits like an effendi and eats, even as his Talmud says, as he sucks the milk of the Gentiles, for the Goyim will work and we will sit and eat. Such a creed characterizes not only the hypocrisy of the Jew but the necessity of his ruling caste to impose restrictions upon his natural tendencies, what is called sin. Indeed, it is fair to say that the Jew is the embodiment of the seven deadly sins and the complete antithesis of the nine noble virtues, as the foregoing and following amplify. Richard Wagner called the Jew the demon of human decadence. Wrath. The religion of Dre embodies not the wrath of God, but simply the wrath of the Jew as the words of God, their own words placed into the mouth of that which they refer to as God, and G.D. single quote. Jewish wrath is proverbial and can be seen in the countless instances of Jewish ritual murder and revolution, any violence perpetuated throughout history against predominantly white civilization, those which they infest and attempt to take over as the children of God. The horrible atrocities perpetuated against the white race throughout history testify to the wrath of the Jews, and the illustration of what they call God in the Old Testament and Talmud are fictional portrayals of the Jewish consciousness, only for despotic fury against all who are other to themselves and who do not bow before them. Envy. The sin in Christianity which is called envy is a recognition of others from a negative standpoint, with an acknowledgement, though usually unexpressed and only semi-conscious, of their possession of superlative traits or qualities that exceed their own. The envy of the Jew towards the white race is notorious and is expressed in the allegory of Snow White, who is viewed with jealousy by the Jewish queen. Envy is not so much presence in the mind of the white race as the white race as a mind, consciousness, of sufficiently elevated caste to be able to transcend the lower ego and to unite with God, and thus is able to overcome the pettiness of the lower consciousness. Accordingly, there is no need of prohibiting envy or portraying it as sin, as it is foreign OT to consciousness of the Aryan. Pride. This sin, as Christianity would portray it, is a sin or undesirable bad behavior only to the extent that it exalts the lower ego, the transient personality, and derives any transcendent principle of consciousness or being beyond this. Pride regarding one's race and one's self as an acknowledgement of his achievements is no sin when it is to acknowledge the truth regarding his race and their creation tier culture. When it is understood that there exists dimension and being beyond this state, humility, in a positive sense the antithesis of pride, may be had. However, the Aryan looks upwards and does not restrict his consciousness to the self but aims beyond it. He does not, like the Christian, deny the self but rather seeks to transcend it and amplify its power and that of his own collective. The nine noble virtues are in modern times posited as the code of ethical conduct for Nordic neo-pagans. However modernist and artificial this system of ethics may be, it nonetheless resonates with the writer and coheres with, as far as he can understand through his comparative spiritual blindness, the traditional behavioral conduct of the Aryan race, and this inferable from the ancient texts of E.G. the Bhagavad Gita and Homeric and Hesiodic poetry, as well as the Edda and Nibelungenlied and other epic poetry that serve as primary source works of, even at the time of their construction, degenerate moderns, children of the Kali Yuga. Hence the nine noble virtues may correctly be applied to the authentic idea of the Aryan man as the regulative code of conduct that applied at the time of its adoption and applies to this day amongst Aryans. That the mongolized of the wit race has gone forward at a breakneck pace of progress through the instrumentality of Jews means that the Aryan ideal is difficult of attainment at best, and yet nonetheless remains latent in the blood. The Aryan, even at the bottom of the cycles of time in the nadir of the Kali Yuga and in the form of a wiggerized blind zombie that constitutes the white male of today, in the words of Julius Evola, ruin rather than a man of race. In adopting the nine noble virtues of the modernist neo-pagans and practicing them within the context of an intra-ribalarian context, never applying what is properly considered virtue in any relations with non-Aryans save as a pragmatic means or tool to achieve the goal of the survival, expansion and advancement of the white race, and the white race alone, under the fundamental principle of the 23 words, what is good for the white race is of the highest virtue, what is bad for the white race is the ultimate sin. Sin, as defined in an Aryan context, means violating the integrity of one's being. The nine noble virtues which support and uphold that integrity and the 23 words as outlined above. Sin is not a self-destructive idea or though form within the mind of the Aryan, but is a forsaking of the development of his own kind and the enabling of the sabotage of his own kind. Racial treason is the ultimate sin, racial loyalty and self-sacrifice on the altar of the racial soul, the highest virtue. 1. Courage is posited first as the foremost of the nine noble virtues, as without courage there is no action, without action there is no life. Inactivity is death, as Mussolini said, and this underscored by Hitler, all life is struggle. Courage is the ability to face existential threats and challenges to one's own being. It is the ability born of willpower and ultimately of blood that is the call to arms for the participation in the combat against enemies foreign and domestic, against these enemies of other kinds and one's own kind who have committed the ultimate sin of racial treason. This who lack courage cannot be spoken of Aryan. Those who possess it have at least one of the necessary criteria of Aryan being. The enemy has done its utmost to weaken the white race, and this over the course of multiple generations, as their plans are a long-term strategy of clandestine subterranean cunning born of their own comparative weakness and lack of courage. It has played upon the mind of the white race and insinuated itself within their consciousness and has introduced through forms of a destructive nature such as egalitarian pacifism, especially by way of Christianity and its modern variants liberalism and New Age philosophy, all oriented around a weakening influence that portrays anything strong and powerful as sinful and anything weak and decrepit as worshipful or virtuous. Thus the law tables of such as Manu are inverted and the scribes of Dri scribe their own distortions upon the law tables of the Aryan race to demoralize, make ashamed of strength and power and make the white race feel it must expiate the sin inherent in its racial soul of what is construed by the enemy as violence, i.e. that which is superlatively creative, powerful and competent, all mechanism of destroying their enemy the white man, who alone threatens their supremacy over the earth. To overcome the enemy's demoralization techniques, one must oppose it within an iron will and must do his utmost to overcome its influence. The best policy is simply to penetrate the veil of illusions that the enemy places over his vision and to understand the fundamental meaning and motivation of the enemy's hopes, that of demoralization and erosion of confidence, the instilling of doubt in one's mind as means of sapping his strength, of weakening the will, the ability of the white race to concentrate their forces on a determinate target, that of the Jew and the Christian slaves who serve as the shield and sword of their Jewish lord, who they venerate even as they bring about civilizational collapse, waiting for the Jewish lord to save them from the chaos they created in the first place. Thus courage is that through clearing the cobwebs of obscurity the spiders of Zion weave over one's face. From their devotion to the higher objective of the Aryan race, the 23 words and the building of power and strength against the enemy. To perpetuate the veil of illusion the wizards of Zion drag across one's vision requires a capacity of discernment, of judgment, of a higher intuition and sharply honed analytical thinking. This is the second of the virtues. Truth, and the ability to arrive at it through the appropriately developed faculties which need no formal education but merely their exercise. This is founded on courage as to discern and acknowledge and to express in word and deed the truth is a courageous act when one lives in a world of lies and deceit, a matrix of illusion orchestrated by the enemy for the purpose of the extermination of their foes and all the enslavement of the remnant of spiritual Israel, that is the slaves of Zion, ruled over by the Jewish overlords. Hence truth is an essential basis for all action and can only be derived through being racially pure, as only such beings can resonate with the sum total with the divine will, having a Marie expansive consciousness. In terms of relations amongst fellow Aryans, truth must be the standard, all actions based hereon and all undertakings having it as their guiding star, the pole star of all action. With the enemy who has no regard for all comprehension of truth, any form of manipulation is valuable, who when it achieves results works towards the 23 words in the survival, expansion and advancement of the white race. Truth within and illusion without must be the creed. Overt mendacity is necessary depending on what is most effective. Honor is founded on truth. Without honor, the preservation of the integrity of one's being, there is a world of lies. Honor entails existing according to the truth, speaking the truth and acting in an open fashion, treating his own kind with the courtesy and respect they merit, and not violating the nobility of his being, mind, body and soul, always working in an upward direction as a duty embossed upon his heart as the compass of all action. To fail in one's duty is dishonorable, and to place oneself before his collective amounts to treason. One's actions should orient in the direction of the 23 words as the plan of true progress, and any derivation therefrom constitutes a transgression of his honor. Thus also any slander, deceit, betrayal, failure to uphold commitments, usury or exploitation of his own kind, all Jewish behavior, itself the definition of dishonor, is prescribed as the antithesis of this virtue of Aryan honor, Aryan or noble. Fidelity, this virtue is encompassed in the phrase racial loyalty, and at present within the modern world is lacking almost completely amongst all white Uyghurs, who have nearly universally adopted the behavior of the Uyghur or have become this through the cultural degeneration and degenerate culture created by Jewry. Fidelity is violated between a woman and man, the woman pursuing mammon at the expense of their own race, divorcing men as feminist rite of passage and achieving the very substance needed for their own racial survival. However, given the inherently self-protective and selfish nature of women, they have fallen for the baits of Jewish deception, wanting to be a careerists and shine in the false light of the Jew world order, and thus have at least some excuse for their infidelity. As to the men, or rather males, those who have forsaken their race as race traitors, serving the system for selfish gain and egotism, are the traitors whose fate is so well illustrated with poetic justice in Titurna Diaries and the section The Day of the Rope. This encompasses all who have placed non-whites before their own kind, for example, real estate agents selling white land created by their own ancestors to non-white savages who defile it with their bestial reek. Business people who have hired non-white savages in place of whites. Christians who have facilitated the passage of non-whites and the supremacy of Jews over the earth. The police and military who have accommodated the genocide agenda. All white male traitors, considered cucks, are deserving of the penalty for racial treason, that being extinction. The race mixers especially are deserving of this fate, as their savage mongrel offspring behave defecated upon the earth are yet more contributions to the violation of God and the creation. One must learn the lesson from these treasonous degenerates and understand that honor is my loyalty, and absence of loyalty is a violation of Aryan honor, the behavior of a Uyghur or Jew. Discipline. Discipline is essential in order to attain any objective, and that of the Aryan is carried forward with an iron will. He must ensure that all distractions and subordinate ends do not deprive Hyumph the necessary energy to devote himself to the more essential task. Discipline implies a logical ordering of means and ends and a laser-like focus, and yet the possession of sufficient adaptability to accommodate changes and the contingencies of life. He must be able to operate in a fluid and protean manner, as the Jew and his cohorts are forever attempting to sabotage whatever routinized forms of behavior he creates. He must be sufficiently disciplined that to become distracted with anything the Jew casts before him is an impossibility, and that will simply acknowledge what was done and how or is being done and circumvent it is a mere obstacle on the obstacle course of life that he must run in order to achieve his objective. To cultivate discipline, one must select objectives and the most efficient means thereto and simply begin to do it. As Aristotle said, when man has a goal and the means to the goal, straightway he acts. To run a marathon, one does not propose to run it only but actually begins the training, else he achieves nothing but building castles in the sky and falling flat on his face. Such is the fate of those who fail to understand the maxim of Bengt Klassen, founder of the creativity movement: thought without action is sterile. Intellectual sophisticates especially fall into this category and are a standing joke in life, represented as such comedic forms as Poindexter, etc. Such is not an area in figuring my way. Discipline is always an active process, not without rational planning, but also not snagged on rationalism and obstructed in its course. The Aryan is a disciplined figure who transcends the welter of circumstantial change and can, like the eagle, observe the forest below and seek out his prey. Hospitality. This is an Aryan trait which can still be discovered in more traditional Aryan societies that are predominantly white, as in the case of Iceland and Eastern Europe. The people are conventionally much more friendly, and this is a function of the homogeneous society, a nation properly so called, one based upon race, not a nebulous and ill-defined humanity or multicultural je ne sais quoi. In today's modern cloaca gentium, that as the postmodern dystopia of the multicult, the lack of hospitality amongst people can be seen in walking past their residences, the spying out of the corner of the eye, the flipping up of the mailbox, the releasing of the hounds, all testaments to the possessive individualist psychopathy of the degenerate modern wiggers who retain latent germs of whiteness buried within the garbage of their souls. Hospitality is an Aryan virtue now lacking, and this even amongst those ideologically aligned with the divine mind, the racialists who so often and more often than not fall upon each other and rent one another out of pettiness and intrigue. The Aryan mentality requires a rekindling, and this brand may be lit only by the fire of nobility, of the transcendence of selfish egotism. Else, like the typical Christian, hospitality is merely adopted as an egocentric genuflection, in the name of a principle, without any genuine other regard, but merely inflation of one's already bloated ego. Genuine hospitality amongst whites is an Aryan virtue, and most importantly an Aryan duty. To forsake one's comrades out of spite or petty differences is a Jewish behavior and belongs in the degenerate society of today's world. Self-reliance. The Aryan is a self-reliant figure, though it visits upon him both blessings and cursings, blessing his race when he does not overburden it with his reliance upon the collective, but cursing his race when he tends towards a hyper-individualism where he forsakes the interests of his collective and allows it to suffer through a lack of contribution to it. Self-reliance is always a virtue when it negates a reliance on one's own kind or on enemies. Today the self-reliance of the white man has become a nullity. Most whites now, through living for themselves, contribute to the system, which seeks their own death and are reliant upon it as means of perpetuating their own destruction in the long or short term, burdening their own race through serving their execution as slave matrix. Self-reliance is a property of the white race, and within the context of the system it is more detrimental to the white race than anything. Within the context of the wilderness, or as pioneers or adventurers expanding territory and power over the earth, that is largely a missed opportunity now, as the world has already been ensnared in the nets of Zion through the instrumentality of the white race's questing spirit that had been harnessed by Jri through the latter's inculcation of their Christian soap into the mind "SOF the white population. Now the whites are as mules hitched to the cart of Jri, pulling them towards their promised land of Zion, at least in their distorted vision, but in reality off a cliff. Thus self-reliance is a virtue when it serves the white race as a collective as applies to all others' behaviors according to the 23 words. What is good for the white race is of the highest virtue, what is bad for the white race is the ultimate sin. A wise application of this virtue is essential and can easily fall into the vice of possessive individualism, the ideology of the Jew world order. Industriousness goes hand in hand with self-reliance, as to be industrious, to be creative, is based upon self-reliance, as it is the person who acts and not the collective. Only a collection of persons playing their proper role, meaning doing what is appropriate for them, are based upon their astrological natal chart and the life they have lived and conditions of the world in which they are forced to live. To be industrious within the context of the Jew world order is to serve the murder machine of Zion and allow oneself to be enslaved and robbed of the fruits of his labor by the Jewish beast who holds the whip hand over him in the form of the police state and in the form of the threat of homelessness and starvation should he not pour all of his energies into the machine as a human battery or animate tool of industry. This industriousness has value only in a qualified way as it relates to the industry in which one works and to the extent it is overall more beneficial than less for the white race and less beneficial than more for the Zion murder machine that threatens the genocide of the white race. Industriousness or work as an in itself is a communist value and has no place in the worldview of the Aryan. Only when industriousness can be translated into creativity and this serving the 23 words does it have value, else it is nothing but the grinding of gears and indeed the grinding of the bones of the white race in the gears of the Zion crime factory. Perseverance. This virtue means what in boxing is called heart, or the ability to endure hardship or challenge over time and not yield to the challenge, but rather seek to overcome it. This implies a higher degree of willpower and the ability to direct one's energies towards a singular objective with a one-pointed concentration of attention, which is the modality of consciousness which defines the will itself manifested in the microcosmal form of the person as a fractal of deity, the cosmic divine will. The enemy is perpetually besetting the white race from all sides and at all times, and thus one must, should he not already possess the faculty, cultivate willpower through challenge, the failure to do so amounting to the failure to persevere against the evil tide of the Demiurge and his minions, the Jews. Masonry and the Judeo-Christian and Communist factions, all who seek to destroy the white race through mixing them out of existence or through outright slaughter via poison and biological weapons. The white race has persevered throughout the history of the world, which could only be its own history, as only the white race has ever had any written records that testify to its glorious presence on the earth. Those few savages and hybrids who have inherited the white man's technology have only created crude and fallacious stories like that of the Jews in their Torah and Talmud, which are merely the scribings of Neanderthals exalting their ego and attacking their more powerful enemy, the white race, in an underhanded fashion. The white race has overcome all obstacles that have been thrown across its path, for the hordes of Asia and the Middle East to their own mind-controlled people who have come under the influence of the black magic of the God spell of the Jewish-created gospel and have thus been placed into bondage with Jews. It remains to be seen whether the white race still has the nine noble virtues inherent in itself and whether it may overcome its enemies. Does it have sufficient 1. Courage to fight for its own survival, expansion and advancement with an eye towards 2. Truth and towards its fellow Aryans with 3. Honor? Does it still possess sufficient 4. Fidelity towards its own kind and ultimately towards God to fight with 5. Discipline against the foe which seeks its death? It must be more 6, hospitable towards its own kindred should it ever aspire towards victory with the likelihood of results, and cease its foolish behavior in its excessive and misapplied 7, self-reliance. It must be 8, industrious and 9, persevere for Aryan victory, else it will fail to achieve the survival, expansion and advancement of its kind, and will leave the earth to the Jew for the latter to further destroy and enslave, turning a spiritual world into a mere springback of lead, the product of the rapacity of the locusts of Zion and their incapacity to maintain the order of God upon earth. Only the Aryan has the capacity to spiritualize the material as only they come from above. For them to disappear from the earth would achieve nothing but the disappearance of spirit from the world.